We try to give you quality.
All right, thanks for your patience, everybody. I'd like to just get going again to keep us moving. We'll go on to item number 6. This is the time and place for a hearing by the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, North Coast Region, to consider adopting order number R1-2011-0100, which would establish waste discharge requirements, timber harvesting, and related land management activities conducted by Humboldt Redwood Company, LLC, in Bear Creek, Humboldt County, California. This item has been properly noticed. Copies of the order and staff report are available on the handout table out in the foyer. Will all those who expect to give testimony in this matter please stand, raise your right hand, and take the following oath? Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth in this matter?
I do.
Thank you. This time we will begin the staff presentation.
Do we need to dim the lights just because I have some photos?
Thank you. Is that enough, or do you want complete darkness?
Can we have complete?
Is there such a thing?
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. I'm Jim Burke, engineering geologist with the Southern Timber Unit of the Timber Non-Point Source Division of the Regional Board. And I'm presenting this morning on draft order number R1-2011-0100. Waste discharge requirements for Humboldt Redwood Company in the Bear Creek watershed in Humboldt County. This WDR is a culmination of many years of work by the regional board staff, and stakeholders in the region. This WDR is a watershed-wide permit that addresses Humboldt Redwood's management activities in the Bear Creek watershed, including timber harvesting, road work, decommissioning, maintenance, and monitoring and restoration work. As I said, it's a watershed-wide scoped permit, and it's intended to address cumulative impacts, including sediment and temperature, and to limit the management causes of those impacts, namely intensive timber harvesting and sediment impacts related to roads. The permit also implements the lower river TMDL for sediment and temperature in controlling landslide risk and preserving and restoring shade to address temperature impacts. So I'm going to go over some of the history of the watershed and the history of timber harvesting and the impacts that resulted from unregulated timber harvesting in the watershed. I'm going to give a outline of the requirements of the WDRs, and then I'll discuss some of the public comments, and we'll move on to public comments. Do I have my little pointer? I know there's that little.
This is the little one.
Oh, thank you.
Top.
Yeah. So just to go over, orient you with Bear Creek. It's located on the lower Eel River. This is a location area map. This is Humboldt Bay and the cities of Eureka and Arcata, Fortuna down here. This is the Highway 101 corridor. Bear Creek drains into the lower Eel about 20 miles upstream from the mouth. This red is the watershed. The lower Eel was listed under the 303D for sediment impairments in 1992. This is a close-up map showing the watershed. It's a fairly small watershed. It's approximately 8.5 square miles. It's a very steep watershed. It's about 100 feet above sea level at the mouth, and in the upper reaches of the watershed, about 2,800 square feet, or 2,800 feet above sea level. Typical coast range, it's high average annual rainfall, 50 to 70 inches of rain annually. It's underlined by Franciscan bedrock, typical of the coast ranges. These are sandstones, shales, very highly sheared rocks, fairly weak geology. And as a result of the high relief and high rainfall and weak bedrock, it's prone to landslides. This is a natural process that can be exacerbated by management activities. The watershed is owned over 95% by Humboldt Redwood Company. The Humboldt State Parks owns the bottom here and a small strip of Caltrans where the 101 bridge crosses, and then there's a small in-holding. This word you can't see is Zanzi, and that's a small landowner in there. The watershed is the dominant land use. It's almost all forested. The dominant land use is timber harvesting. Timber harvesting began on an industrial scale in the late 40s. That I'm going to show a series of air photos that pretty much tell that story. But when they began harvesting in the late 40s, there was during the period of unregulated logging, fairly intensive logging practices, and that, well, I'll let the air photos tell the story. So I'll want to make a couple of points with these air photos, and the series of air photos is on they're not exactly oriented the same, and just to orient you, there's this sort of noticeable confluence about halfway up the watershed that I'll point out with each one, just so that you can see where we are in the watershed. So 1947. Essentially old growth conditions, and a couple points from this slide. There are landslides that have occurred under the forest canopy, so they do naturally occur. And the drainages here, they're dark. You'll see that change in this photo. By 1954, 7 years after that previous photo, they've harvested a large percentage of the watershed. This is very intensive harvesting. There's clear cut and partial harvesting. It was all done by tractors. There is roads and skid trails everywhere. There's that confluence that I pointed out. And the one thing that you'll notice is here in the old growth, it's all dark here. There's a lot of light color, that's bare ground. There's a lot of landslides. Here's a large one here. The removal of trees and cutting roads and skid trails into the hill slopes resulted in a lot of landslides, a lot of sediment discharge. Sediment has filled in the creek in a lot of the main reaches of the watershed by this time. 1965, a year after the large storm and flood in the Eel River, just ongoing harvesting. Here's that confluence down here. A lot of the areas that were harvested previously are healing, vegetation is regrowing, and of course, there's ongoing harvesting. 1997, there's that confluence there. You can see roads throughout the watershed. At this point, the forest practice rules had been in effect for about 20 years. So this was all harvested under the forest practice rules. December of 1996, there was a large storm event that resulted in widespread landsliding in the watershed. You can see a large landslide down here, and this main reach of Bear Creek has been filled in with sediment. And 2010, the most recent air photos that we have. The vegetation is coming back. There's less light colored area in the photo. Here is that confluence. And the main stem reach is greening up. So we have regrowth and some degree of recovery in the watershed. Following the 1997 storms and landslides and debris torrents, this is a picture of the main stem of Bear Creek. I don't know exactly where this is located, but this is just showing what happened. The stream was just filled in. Riparian vegetation was removed, and these filled-in streams will often say, it looks like a road. Well, this actually is a road. You can see the tire tracks here, and that should not be a road. So since then, I just wanted to show a couple pictures that illustrate things are improving in the watershed. This is a photo that was taken during a trip that we made last summer. And pools are coming back. Sediment is being moved out of the watershed and sorted, and the canopy is growing back. This is mostly young alders. It's it's signs of recovery. The recovery is fragile at this point, I would say. Another photo from last summer, summer of 2010. Pools are beginning to form, so things are moving in the right direction. Since the storms of the winter of 96-97, things have happened in the watershed. Some improvements have taken place. A lot of the road-related sediment sources have been fixed. Over 95% of them have been fixed. The remainder of those are scheduled to be fixed in the WDR. The road system has been storm-proof, so it's been brought up to the current standards, and many of the roads lower down near the streams have been decommissioned, and the road system has been moved upslope to better positions, I would say. There has been ongoing stream monitoring that began in 1998 and has continued and expanded and will be a requirement of the WDR. And as I showed in those pictures, the stream is recovering. Just a brief timeline of what's happened out there. In 1997, regional board and other agencies involved in timber harvest review were aware of the impacts that had occurred as a result of the storm and met and all agreed that this watershed and the other four of the Humboldt County watersheds up there that were sort of considered the five watersheds agreed they were cumulatively impacted. In 1999, the owner, Pacific Lumber, their habitat conservation plan was approved. That included some measures that are included in the WDR as provisions in the WDR, including protection for riparian and hill slope and road management. Prior to 2003, waste discharge requirements just were waived for timber harvesting in 2003. That was no longer the case as a result of a Senate bill. In 2004, the regional board approved the general waste discharge requirements and the categorical waiver for timber harvesting. And in 2005, that was the last harvesting that took place in this watershed. After that time, essentially it was the regional board's position that timber harvesting in those five cumulatively impacted watersheds could not be enrolled in the general WDR due to cumulative impacts. 2007, the EPA approved the TMDL for sediment and temperature for the Lower Eel River. In 2008, the regional board issued a request for a report of waste discharge to the landowner, at that time Pacific Lumber, for in 2010, Humboldt Redwood Company submitted their report of waste discharge, and that was determined to be complete. And that report of waste discharge included their management plan to address, well, that has become this WDR. And that management plan essentially included prevention measures to prevent creating new sediment sources. As we saw, the causes of those sediment sources were intensive harvesting and roads. And so the WDR includes limits on the intensity and extent of harvesting. It includes a management plan for roads to prevent sediment discharge from roads. It also includes measures to prevent or restore riparian shade. It includes restoration. And the WDR implements the Lower Eel River TMDL, which essentially called for reduction in landslide management related landslides and preservation and restoration of riparian shade. So I'm just going to go over some of the key elements of the WDR. Harvest limitations include no clear cutting. So they will be limited to partial harvesting, mostly selection harvest. No more than 30% of the watershed harvested in a 10-year period. There is no harvesting within 100 feet of Class 1 and Class 2 streams, and restricted or limited harvesting on slopes vulnerable to landsliding. The harvest limitations are aimed to, in large part, at preventing management-related landslides. So landslide prevention and harvest limitations are kind of almost interchangeable. So among the landslide prevention measures I've included, my first bullet point is just the harvest limitations. Preventing clear cutting and preventing high rates of harvest are one of the best measures to reduce the risk of landslides. There are a couple of suites of prescriptions. One of them is from their habitat conservation plan that essentially limits harvesting on the steep streamside slopes that are the most vulnerable to landsliding. They had also developed a landslide hazard model that segregates the watershed into five different hazard classes, and it includes prescriptions that either restrict harvesting completely on the highest hazard classes or limit harvesting and also require review by licensed geologists for any proposed harvesting on some of the moderate landslide hazards. There's an important component is also just ongoing landslide monitoring, including renewed aerial photographs periodically, just to keep an inventory of the landslides and help us understand how management measures under the WDR are affecting slope stability. Other important measures are erosion control plans associated with timber harvesting. So they have their road management plan that addresses sediment sources from roads. There are non-road related sediment sources, and these will be inventoried and scheduled for treatment as part of the erosion control plans. As I mentioned, they have an ongoing road management plan where they bring their remaining roads up to current standards and regular inspections, which is one of the most important components. There's also a stream restoration requirement. They'll submit a stream restoration plan by June of 2013. And an attachment to the WDR is a monitoring and reporting plan. There will be annual monitoring of roads, erosion control sites, landslides, as I mentioned, and ongoing in-stream monitoring. They'll also be submitting an annual work plan at the beginning of each year so that we know what they plan to do during the upcoming year, and we'll have a mechanism to review that and comment on what they're planning on doing. And then there'll be annual summary reports where at the end of each year they tell us what they have done and how they're progressing in the watershed and how the watershed is responding, and then a five-year summary report to where we can get a handle on longer-term trends. As I mentioned, this is a watershed approach. So there is not individual enrollments for timber harvest plans. There is an annual fee that covers all of their permitted activities in the watershed. So regional board staff, our role in administering this WDR will be involved in auditing compliance, make sure that their management activities are complying with the requirements of the WDR. Timber harvest plans that they submit in the watershed have to comply with the terms of this WDR. That's an enforceable provision. We'll be reviewing their work plans and summary reports, and we still participate in timber harvest plan review. We're a formal member of the review team per the forest practice rules, so we'll be out there on a regular basis. We received public comments from four entities during the public comment period that we responded to in writing, and there in the agenda package. And we received one comment after the public comment period from Caltrans, and that got in the agenda package, right? It was essentially they expressed their concern. They've got the bridge down on 101, and they're just are concerned that upslope activities don't impact their bridge, and we share that wish. And Going back, I wasn't going to go into this. Richard Ginger, who has been here many times and has been involved in this watershed for years, forever. He submitted comments. He was unable to be here today, and I've spoken to him, and he's expressed his concerns. He was involved in our work with the stream restoration plan, and he really wanted to get out the concern that the development of the restoration plan is an open and transparent process, and that there is public public participation. And it's not clear how that would be a requirement of the WDR, but I certainly share his wish, and he's been involved, and he will continue to have an opportunity to be involved. So the Environmental Protection Information Center, EPIC, submitted comments, and one of their comments addressed basically said that there should, because of the court ruling regarding logging roads and point source permitting, that they suggested that this should be a NPDES permit, and we responded to that in writing, and we included a finding as an addendum that I forgot to mention is in your agenda package, addressing that and essentially acknowledging the ruling, and our understanding is that ruling is being appealed, and it's not determined how we need to address that. We have no direction from the state board regarding NPDES permits for logging roads. But we would point out that Humboldt Redwood Company is certainly, they have the opportunity to apply for an industrial stormwater permit. Any permit that is issued under the NPDES program would not likely be as stringent as this WDR. We feel that the requirements of this WDR are more than adequate to address polluted runoff. And that completes my presentation. And I'd like to just include the recommendation that you adopt the order and the accompanying mitigated negative declaration. And thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Any board member questions?
Yes, thank you.
Hmm? The addendum? With the addendum, thank you.
Yeah, this is just for my general education. What is a headwall swale? I just had not read that term or know it.
It's on the very uppermost headwater stream segments, essentially the class threes, the steep contributing area above the beginning of the channel. They call them zero order swales. It's where a lot of the hill slope material accumulates, and it's a very common source area for debris slides.
Okay. And then on, and it gets confusing because we got the markup draft in that, but I'm on page 22 of the markup draft, number 8.
Mm-hmm.
You had disagreements with Cal Fire, and that's fine. I assume you intentionally had it to be disagreements less formal than a non-concurrence. In other words, that it's broader than that. And I just want to ask, was that your intention or not?
You say page 22?
Yeah, let me, on the markup sheet, the one with, and it would be number 8, water quality issues identified on any particular THP and not resolved prior to THP approval by CAL FIRE shall be resolved to the satisfaction of the Regional Board Executive Officer prior to the commencement of that THP. The way I read that, that's broader than non-concurrence.
Actually, I think it's, yes, it is broader than non-concurrence. It does not necessarily have to be a non-concurrence. Essentially, this gives us a mechanism where it's not a complete veto over what they do.
Right.
But,
well, it'd be less than veto and less than non-concurrence is what you intend.
That, it could be a non-concurrence.
Well,
or,
it could. It, of course, would include that.
Yes.
Okay. Then on page 23, item 16D, I can't understand what that means. So either it looks to me like it's a broken sentence or it's certainly awkward language, but can you translate exactly what was intended there?
No. This is I think, I won't say legalese, but this is...
Oh, we'll blame it on the attorneys.
I recommended that this...
Oh, that's Amanda Olson.
I recommended that this paragraph be deleted because there is already a standard permit term that says we can enforce for violations of the order, and you wouldn't want to enforce by modifying or revoking this permit. So just for the record, I didn't write that.
Who wrote it?
Plausible deniability.
Plausible deniability.
Anyway, we either need to have it make sense in the English language or delete it. And then I had a question.
Mr. Corbett, would you be agreeable to just deleting the paragraph?
Yeah.
D.
D. Or just D.
Oh, no, not the whole paragraph, D. Just that.
Okay.
The rest makes sense in the English language. That one just
so
was.
So if we can't understand it, then don't approve it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Kind of along those lines. Then we had the Ligon study in 1999 by Cal Forestry cited, and the way it reads, it recommends harvest rates between 30% and 50% per decade. Mm-hmm. Was that not to exceed that? And then 50% is a 20-year rotation, and I'm unaware of almost anyone in the industry going that rapidly.
And
I don't know that study. I'd actually like that sent to me in the mail, but it just seemed an unusual study, I guess.
It wasn't the result of a study. Essentially, it was a result of them speaking with a wide range of stakeholders, and they said that the timber industry had recommended up to 85%, and other interests recommended as low as 10%. And what they came up with was what they considered to be a reasonable range, acknowledging that there's no one magic number and that there are many different factors that can affect what a reasonable rate should be.
Okay, well, I just want to say those are very, very high rates, higher than we've experienced and higher than what got this watershed in trouble. So I just didn't quite understand the study in the context and what it was saying. And then on page 25, I had one other question number three. It discharges of waste, I'll read it, discharges of waste which are not otherwise authorized by waste discharge requirements or other order by the regional board. And shouldn't we go comma basin plan standards or other order?
Where would you put that comma?
I would do it after not otherwise authorized by waste discharge requirements, comma, basin plan standards, or other orders issued by the regional board.
Well, again, this is kind of...
That's
the problem.
That's
yes.
Okay. we don't want anyone to have to claim authorship. We're not going to go there. Then lastly, the 30% cut per decade, I understand that concept, and that's about a 33 and a third year rotation. But when you have selective cutting, does that mean they can, is that a clear cut? Is that selective cutting? Is that include pre-harvest? I don't quite know how you're interpreting that.
It specifies very clearly in section 1A of the specific requirements.
Okay.
No clear cutting, and they can only use selection on the majority of that. I believe the it's 1,550 acres total allowed in 10 years. About 1,350 of that only is selection, and then they're allowed 200 acres of essentially rehabilitation or variable retention harvesting. So it's very specific.
What okay, and you feel that's clear?
It is very clear.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Chair? Jim, thank you very much. This is truly restorative forestry, it looks to me like, to try and do this. And I think you and staff have done a very good job at putting together a package that seems to balance the end user's needs here to do something that is a net positive. One question. In finding number 10, it talks about TMDL compliance in being a 65% reduction from the 1989 to 2003 period.
Yes.
And in finding number 20, actually in background, number 20, it talks about that PWA did a sediment source investigation at Bear Creek.
Yes.
That there was 20 times normal or 20 times, how do I say that, 20 times background.
Yes.
Natural rates.
Yes.
Between a period of 47 and 97. So there's an overlap of those two. And so my question is from TMDL compliance. We seem to have an overlap that is based, and I'm not, how do I say this? I'm not saying that it's potentially wrong, but just for me to understand, there's a 50-year window where it looks like they judged that there was a 20X natural background from background on sediment discharge here. And yet the TMDL compliance timeframe is backed into that as well. So I'm just curious about what is TMDL compliance here as it relates to this watershed. And how do we derive that number then? Because the TMDL load allocation is 65% reduction overlaps on that time frame. So I'm just curious.
And
we're trying to track where you are. Sorry.
It's okay. It's on actually. It's number 10 of the order, and then number 20 is actually in the background part of it, Jim. And I don't mean to say it's inconsistent. I'm just curious because I generally support this whole process. I think it comes out with a net positive to a watershed that certainly has a history to it. I'm just trying to track, though, where compliance lines are here as specific to TMDL and what's being used, because this statement is somewhat, to me, inconsistent, just maybe by the data, or maybe it's not.
I did have a slide in this presentation showing kind of the PWA's sediment estimates during different time periods, and actually that 20% increase in natural rates between 1947 and 1997 can be they parsed it a little bit into smaller chunks. They look at essentially there's 20% between 1947 and
it's actually 20 times, right? It's not 20%.
Yes, thank you.
It's okay.
So they break it up between 1947 and 1966, and then between 66 and 97. So the 66 to 97 time period, the increase over background is more on the order of 3 to 4 times.
During that specific time frame, you mean? That
yes.
End time frame?
Yes. And I think that I know we cited sediment estimates, and I think that using absolute numbers on estimates in a system like this is it's not a precise science.
Totally agree.
So the actual load allocations in the way that the lower EL TMDL cites them is reduction in landslide risk and for temperature preserve canopy. So I think that it's the BMPs, and it's the whole suite of measures: reduced harvest rate, reduced intensity, landslide prescriptions, geologic review. Those are essentially the measures that will meet the load allocations. And the numbers, the 65% reduction is cited from the lower ELT MDL.
Well, let me ask you this, Jim, because this comes, this is a general waste discharge requirement. This comes back in, this comes back in 5 years or not?
It doesn't.
No. This is a stick and it's good.
Yes.
Well, here's a, and I don't mean stick like, you know, you whack somebody with it, but it's there and it's like, no, that it's a, that we do it once and it lives, right?
Right.
hit it with a stick. And I see that there's a fairly robust monitoring here too. Let me just then ask, from the standpoint of monitoring, as this goes forward, this is absolutely a work in progress. And I'm fairly comfortable with this whole thing. I would just like to, maybe because this informs, there is, as you said, more than one watershed like this in this area that has these types of histories to them and results that happened and the sediment impacts that go with them. And I think this is a significant learning opportunity as it goes. And so because it doesn't come back to us in 5 years, then in some time forward, and I assume you're here for a while, that we're all here for a while.
I assume that too.
And that this is a work in progress, that we hear back, and how's this go, right? That there is a 65% number in here, and fine, that's out of the ELT MDL. I could live with that. I would like to know, as we go, how's this going to work? How does it work? What's the performance? What's the monitoring telling us here? And what did we learn and not learn? So I'll just leave it with that. I think it's very interesting to try and, again, do restorative forestry, and I generally support this. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Any other questions? Great. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
All right. Ms. Coleman.
Discuss with Mr. Corbett just a slight amendment to page 25, number 3, from what he had suggested, so that it would read instead as discharges of waste which are not otherwise authorized by waste discharge requirements or other order issued by this regional water board or the State Water Resources Control Board to waters of the state, and then insert in violation of basin plan standards, and then back to are prohibited, period, and delete except as allowed below.
Good?
Good.
Thank you. Let's see. See Mr. Janai and Mr. Miles here from HRC. Do you gentlemen have I didn't believe you had a presentation or anything for this, did you? Or you wish to comment on anything before we go to the public comment?
We were just here to answer any questions.
Great.
I just had one question, and someone will have to come to the microphone very briefly. come on now. It's really fun, you know. There were two comments that struck me in the public comments. One of was yours on fire. And fire just introduces an entirely different element on both the need to cut timber to salvage it and on erosion rates. Both go through the end. Did you... I didn't see a readily available or easy place to just tack on with fire, so I almost thought of having that HRC shall meet with the regional board ED within 6 months of any significant fire. Would that, and because it's going to take a major sorting out if that event occurs.
Yeah,
I agree with
problem.
You totally. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, Mike, can you introduce yourself real quick?
Yeah. I'm Mike Miles with the Humboldt Railroad Company and a forester for the southern area, which includes Bear Creek and Jordan Creek.
And he was ordered to answer these questions by his boss. No.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Now, your introduction was much longer than your response to Mr. Corbett was.
Yeah, well, I'm learning. I'd be happy to answer any other questions that you have, though.
I think we're all right. In terms of the proposed language changes that have been kicking around, I suppose we're looking at what Ms. Coleman had just talked about, the proposed language change to item 3, just referencing the basin plan. Then there was item 16D, which was just kicked around for deletion.
Those all seem very appropriate.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Move on to public comment. I have one speaker card from Richard Ganger, excuse me. Ms. Coleman?
Yeah, and Jim mentioned this, and I offered to Mr. Ganger that I would just read his very short comment since he cannot make it down here today. And what he wanted to emphasize is that cooperative agreements and periodic field tours are imperative. Transparent and field-oriented process for development of the restoration plan and its implementation are strongly warranted for inclusion in Section E. Bear Creek and its recovery is a classic issue of protecting the public trust. You have an obligation through the water quality law and regulations available to you to realize this protection and make sure that the lessons of Bear Creek are learned and available to future generations, as well as specifically achieve recovery of the Bear Creek watershed.
Thank you. That was the only speaker card that I had. That's all you have received? Okay, great. Thank you. Let's see. Jim, are there any conclusions you'd like to make or any other concluding comments?
No.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay, well, we have this in front of us with a few changes and an addendum.
Mr. Chair, I would give you a motion to adopt R1-2011-0100 with the changes that you just discussed and the deletion of the one paragraph or one sentence.
I'll second, but I want to have one clarification and make one amendment. The first clarification is on D, page 21, on the markup, which currently reads, if treatment of such sites stands or other CSDSs, HRC does not relinquish responsibility for also treating the standard stranded sites for logistical reasons, is recommended that measures be taken to prevent sites from becoming stranded. I want to make sure that we haven't created a counter incentive to putting roads to bed with this provision, so I hope that it'll be interpreted with a balance of interest. That's all. I don't think we need to change the language. I just don't. I think we may. It may be a very good thing if they want to put something, a road to bed, and it may leave something stranded. And if they get an excessive liability for treating the site, then they may not want to do it. And I just don't want it interpreted that way. And then the only other one is, and I'm not quite sure where the best insert place is, but just HRC shall meet with the regional board executive director within 6 months of any significant fire. And I think we're still pretty weak on fire and also integrating CAL FIRE plans in this kind of watershed basin permit. And I want us to, I don't want to hold this one up. This is great. But I want us to think through that issue. So I'll make a motion that we add that, and maybe staff can find a good spot to insert it.
Is that something that can go in the MRP?
Yes, it could go there too.
Okay.
Okay.
I will wait on a response.
And then while we're doing that, I do want to say, first of all, this brings to life the language where an owner can apply for a permit by ownership in whole or in part, and I think that's a great trend. It gets watershed-wide. It deals with cumulative impacts. I actually think it allows us to better coordinate with forestry. It's better for the environment, and it's a lot more efficient for the applicant. So I do want to stress to staff that I think this is a real progression.
Mr. Chair, I want to make a note about the late Caltrans letter, too. I know we're bouncing around. I'm sorry. But I don't recommend that we admit that in the record, but I do want to say to Caltrans, and I'll follow up on the person that wrote the letter, needs to work with HRC as far as, you know, liabilities for bridges and whatnot. I just want to make it clear in the record that the regional board would not be liable for those types of injuries, and HRC should work directly with Caltrans on that.
Thank you.
They did well for not being in the record. No.
Okay, for Mr. Corbett's language would suggest insert page 24 of the markup version, number 19, and add at the bottom of the end of that paragraph, HRC shall meet with the executive officer within 6 months of a major fire.
Okay. Thank you. So I'd like to move it be inserted there.
Okay.
That's acceptable with the motion maker.
Thank you. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Thank you. Motion passes. Ms. Coleman?
May I just say this concludes a long, long history with this watershed that began certainly long before I arrived. Mr. Corbett and Mr. Massey have lived this, and it started even before you guys arrived on the board. I think it's an excellent piece of work. I think it's a really, really good, solid permit. I think the cooperation from HRC has been in stark contrast to their predecessor, that we've been able to come to this kind of an agreement, and I think we look forward to a long-term permit that gives them the assurance of land management along with our assurance that water quality will be protected, and a lot of really great work on both sides.
Well, we're appreciative of staff, and we look forward to seeing more. Thanks, HRC.
And then the only other thing is please keep us informed on where the NPDES permit issue goes. It's happened three times under the Clean Water Act. This is the third time one is handled administratively, one a court overturned it, and this may be a court overturning of Congress or may not be. But so I understand why we're not off to the races to conform to such an appeal. But it could be a game changer, and what we need to do is reset to make sure we have a visible and efficient permit process if it should be required by federal law.
Mr. Chair, along those lines, the board may want to consider a verbal delegation to the executive officer to modify the finding on that court case just to keep it updated because this permit is going to be in place, and so I think you can do that. It wouldn't change any of the substantive provisions of the order, but we could go back in and modify depending on the outcome of the Supreme Court appeal.
That's just to keep it current?
Right.
Okay.
You could just tell Kat she can do that.
Can we do that now or outside of this?
You can do it now.
Do it now? Okay.
I'll move we amend our existing motion to include the authority delegated to the executive director to update the finding regarding the court case as new facts develop. Okay.
Second.
It's fine by me. The executive officer then has my authority to do as said. Item 6 is now closed. Thank you.